We are up to Perek Yud Gimel Pasek Vav. Nehemiah arrives back from his visit to Artaxasta. He goes back to visit Daryovesh, who is also called Artaxasta. He is the king. And while he's away, the situation in Eretz Yisrael deteriorates. The people begin to intermarry once again. And it appears that there was a fear that they would be attacked by the surrounding nations. So the Kohen Gadol and the nobles are very truly making an alliance with Tovia and Sanballat, which includes marriage. Tovia would marry the daughter of the third Kohen, granddaughter of the Kohen Gadol. We'll see exactly who he married. And his son also married. There were two main marriages, and they were also given a dwelling in the Beis HaMikdash itself, which seems to be shocking. And the Kohen Gadol, he cleaned out one of the chambers that was used in the past for storage for the Menachos, for the Levoina, for the Korbanos, and for the Meiser that was meant to be collected for the Levim. Everyone was supposed to bring the Meiser Rishon into the Beis HaMikdash and put it in the storehouses, and they were distributed to the Levim so they have what to eat. And that chamber that was designated to store the Meiser for the Levim was transformed into a dwelling for Tovia. Nehemiah comes back after his stay, which we're going to see what happened. He went away for a period of time, and he's extremely disturbed, and he comes to make a tikkun. And before we go further, I told yesterday we have to tie up some loose ends. This day, we mentioned by Yom Ahu, they read from the Sefer, the Perek begins, Perek Yud Gimel begins on this day when they read from the Sefer of Moshe B'Yosnei Ha'am, and we discussed when exactly this day was. Rashi says it was, well, the Metzudah says it was the day when they, the same day when they formed, when they inaugurated the wall, the Chanukas Choymas Yerushalayim, which is a continuation of Perek Yud Beis. It was on that very day when they took out the Sefer Torah, and they read that it's prohibited for there to be intermarriage. I think the Malbim, he quotes other sources where Bayom Ahu does not mean on that day, it means much later. It means when Nehemiah returned. On the day when Nehemiah returned, or on the day of the Bris HaMonach, not necessarily on the day of the Chanukas HaChoyma, but at a later period of time, or a different period of time, he gave them Musar, and he read from the Sefer Torah that says, Yolo Yavoy Amoini Umayavi Bekahal Holokim Ad Olam. Why? We discussed some of the details yesterday. But Rav Schwab asked a very basic question that at this point in time, the Gemara tells us this prohibition no longer applies because there no longer is a nation called Amoin Umoyav, Bas Sancheirif, Sancheirif who lived about 200 years before the Churban Bayis Rishon, which now is about 300, almost 350 years ago, conquered basically the entire civilized world and relocated, told everyone that's in ancient times, that's how you would establish a rule. You would exile nations, shift populations, because so that everyone, until they would settle and they would develop a new economy and get used to the country, by that time it would take them decades, centuries, and they wouldn't have time to think about rebelling against the current government, the current ruler of the world. So Sancheirif came, was mebalbel, he confused, he mixed up the entire world. No longer was there, after the time of Sancheirif, a nation of Ammon. There was no longer a nation of Moab, there was no longer a nation of Mitzrayim, there was no longer a nation of Amalek, because everyone was relocated. And due to the relocation and the confusion and the mingling of people, everyone lost their identity as a nation. Therefore, this discussed in the Gemara, according to some opinions, no longer all of these rules in the Torah that you may not Mitzri lo yavi bekal Hashem and Amoni moyavi no longer apply because these nations are extinct. Now, not everyone agrees to that approach, but let's learn with those mafarish that is correct. This is now 300 years after the world has been completely transformed. This halacha does not apply. So what are they all of a sudden they reading from the Sefer Torah that it says, according to those Mepharshim, that the will was Mabulbul through Sancheriv? It's no longer relevant, this halacha. This halacha was halacha from the time of the Torah, and no longer, it's like putting on the, you're not allowed to put in the mashkar from the Shtei Mezuzos by the Korban Pesach. The only time you take the blood of the Korban Pesach and you smear it in the mashkar from the Shtei Mezuzos was Yitzias Mitzrayim. So this was bottled, this halacha. So the answer is that this really is the entire theme of this parak, and this, the Lehi mentioned yesterday, that this parak deserves much more attention than all of the parakim in Tanakh, is because this is the Gemara. This is the last parak of the entire Tanakh. In the way that it's ordered, for whatever reason, we put Divrei Hayom at the end. It's printed in the printers put Divrei Hayom at the end. But as far as chronology, this is the end. This is the last parak of Tanakh. And there's one common theme that runs through this entire parak, which we have to really see the end. We didn't just stop the parak Vav, is Nehemiah is trying to impress upon the people that although there are many mitzvos which are no longer in practice or are in practice, what you have to concentrate on from now on to the end to the coming of Mashiach is the spirit of the law. There is the technical law and there is the spirit of the law. Like we're going to see, he makes a very big fuss about Shabbos. There was no technical violation of Shabbos. No one was chayiv malchus, no one was chayiv misa. Everything was done kedas u'chadin. But if you would live among them, you wouldn't even know it's Shabbos. Because the goyim are doing commerce for the Jews. The Jews are watching, they're telling them, move this. You would never know that it was Shabbos. The spirit of Shabbos was completely bottled, even though technically they were following the laws. Here as well, he's telling them, there's a prohibition to marry Amon u'Moav. Why? Torah tells us why. They have bad midos. When you're coming out of Egypt, you're in the desert, it's derech eretz to come out to someone who's passing by on a hot day to give them a drink of water, to give them a piece of bread. And they did not have the decency to give us bread and water. Even worse, they spent money to hire Bilam ben Baar to curse us. They have the most corrupt character. And therefore, the Torah says, stay away. I don't want their blood to mingle with your blood. I don't want them to marry into Klal Yisrael. We find the same concept by the Avos. Why did Avram tell Eliezer, I want you to go back to Aram Naharaim, I want you to go back to Lavan. I don't want you to take from the people of Benos Canaan. Why? They had bad midos. Why? Lavan was any better. Lavan, they were over there for the Zohar. They had the trough in. So the Ulma from Bali Musa say, if you have a problem in Avodah Zarah, it's not so terrible. So you can channel your desire to serve a deity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if the midos are corrupt, your character traits are corrupt, you lack integrity, you lack discipline, this life is just the life of Hefkerus, that is something which cannot be easily repaired. So here, Ezra is coming over here, that he's not focusing on the technical halacha. He's coming to emphasize these people, the reason why the Torah does not allow intermarriage, their technical reasons, and of course it goes without saying, the ikar is always the halacha. We should never get confused and start saying that because we know what the reason is, they start making exceptions. In this case, the reason doesn't apply. Chas v'shalom. No one's saying that. But he's just trying to expand the spirit of halacha, l'chumra. Now, Lakula. There is no technical nation anymore called Amon u'Moav. We're going to call Sanbalat. Tovia and Sanbalat. Sanbalat was from. Tovia, I think, was Amon. Tovia was from the nation of Amon. It doesn't mean he was Mamish Amon, because we know Amon is bottle. It just means that he was some type of reincarnation of Amon, which is not the halachic Amon. But Ezra, Nehemiah is telling the people, the people that live around us, they have bad midos. They have the worst character traits. And the proof is, when we came back from Bavel, to rebuild the Bayis Sheni, they should have also come to greet us, the surrounding nations, Bilechem Uvemayim. And instead, what did they do? What did Sanballat? They said Lashon Hara to the Persian government, to Quraysh, the Jews are rebelling. When we wanted to build the walls, they are attacking us. We had to have, for every one, every construction, you had to have a team, like you had to have a secret service, just for every single Baal Malacha, construction worker, in order that he should not be attacked and killed. That's what we learned in the previous prakim. They tried to attack us. They did not. History is repeating itself. When we left Mitzrayim to come into Eretz Yisrael, Ammon Umoav did not greet us Belechem with a mind. They hired Bilam ben Baar, and therefore the Torah said these people cannot be part of Klal Yisrael. Stay far away from them. We have exactly the same thing happening once again here at this point in time. It's not the technical Ammon Umoav. It's not halachically forbidden, but the spirit of the law is true. We left Bavel. Koresh issued a proclamation: everyone shall return to Eretz Yisrael. 42,360 people returned, and we arrive, and what are they doing? Instead of greeting us, Belechem Uvamayim, the surrounding nations are cursing us, they're attacking us, they're trying to harm us, and therefore we have a duty to follow in the spirit of the law. It's not a technical law, but the spirit of the law, to stay far, far away from these people. Don't form alliances. Have nothing to do with them. Just keep your distance. And here I go on vacation for a couple of weeks. I come back. Look what's going on here. Intermarriage, alliances. You even give Toviah a residence in the Beis HaMikdash itself. What's going on over here? What? Exactly. So here, by the way, this is an amazing insight, because this last parak, and for that matter, really the all of Ksuvim, we're going to talk about that later on in the third segment. I want to talk about the difference between Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, but the whole, all the Ksuvim, specifically the Sifrei Ksuvim, and even more specifically the three Svarim of Daniel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, is a blueprint, a template for how we should conduct ourselves in modern times, leading up to the times of Mashiach, Yimos HaMashiach. And it's very interesting, you drew many parallels, that 1948, after the Holocaust, when the world, so to speak, told Klal Yisrael, okay, you know, you have permission. You have permission to come back to your land. It's definitely, you can't deny the fact that there are striking similarities between Koresh's proclamation, the Jews can return to Eretz Yisrael, and the world, so to speak, giving permission through all the different mandates and proclamations in the United Nations and so on and so forth. The world gave permission for Klal Yisrael to come back. And there are surrounding nations, and there are people in the region. And the question that we have to say to ourselves, what would be proper if it was the other way around? If it was another nation, if we were living in that territory, and someone was coming back to their homeland, what would be our moral duty? Our moral duty would be to greet them, at least, Belechem v'mayim. Basics. You don't have to be the best friends. When we came back to Eretz Yisrael after the Holocaust to build the Eretz Yisrael, the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, did the surrounding nations come to greet Klal Yisrael? Belechem. Again, just the bare basics. We're not talking about exotic fruit. We're not talking about pizza and deli. We're talking about lechem uvamayim. No. I mean, we have to ask. Like, it's just an interest to categorically know. There are some nations that were very welcoming. There are, you have to, everything has, you can't generalize. But, and not only that, who are the people that hired against us, Bilam ben Baar, to curse us, to go to war against us? And the Musar Haskel is, Nehemiah is telling, those nations that decided, made a statement by not coming to do the very basics of Lechem V'mayim, not to greet you, not to have the basic decency of what you deserved. My message to you is, just stay away from them. Don't form alliances with them. Don't be good to them. Just don't go to war with them. You don't have to go to war. Just keep your distance. Don't ingratiate yourselves. Calm. We'll give you an embassy, we'll give this for you, we'll do that for you. You're not our friends. You have shown it. You have proven that you're not our friends. And see, we live in a world where everything is politically correct. Everything has to be just proper, and your biggest enemies in front of the television are your best friends. you see from Nehemiah, he doesn't go for that. He's saying that, you know, you don't have to go and go to war. But his approach appears, maybe I'm wrong, but appears to be much more to the left. I don't know if I'm using the right, left and right the right way, but much more different than the approach that's accepted today in the modern world. You don't have to always be politically correct. Klal Yisrael responded, as we learned yesterday, what do? They listened to his words and they removed the Erev Rav. To the right. Okay, look at the words of the how what was the response when he told him by he passed a gimel vahi keshama mes da Torah vayavdilu chol erev miYisrael. They removed any mingling. Stay away. We have nothing to do with you. Why? Because you have shown that you won't have nothing to do with us. And you hired Bilam ben Baar to curse us. You've shown your true colors. Just stay away from us. Mind your own business. We don't want to have anything to do with you. We're not going to go out of our way. Oh, let's be friends. Come, we'll give you land. We'll give you this. We'll give you that. Keep your distance. There's definitely a message. This is the message of Nehemiah for all future generations, how to conduct yourself with people that are not kind to you. It's not technical, because there no longer is Na'am Lamov, but it's the spirit of the law that he's trying desperately to impart to the minds of Klal Yisrael. This is what you have to focus on. I told you, I'm not going to repeat the story, but the Mishol Salanter, that story where there was no kittel for Tal and Geshem, and they wanted just to daven Tal and Geshem. So we don't have a kittel, so big deal, you don't have a kittel. He made them wait an hour, so someone should go back to get the kittel, because he told the people, Bizman Hazeh, what do we have? All we have today is Jewish custom. We don't have today, everything today is watered down. Minog is so important. It is the fabric of Klal Yisrael today. It's the spirit of the law that we have today, and that we have to guard like a hawk. And it's kedai to wait an hour for someone to go get the kittel to preserve our tradition. And that's what he's saying. Tradition is really one and the same with the spirit of the law. It's not necessarily always the halacha per se. You can't go lakul, of course. Chas v'shalom, don't go say the spirit of the law doesn't apply. So therefore, we can you know. All the laws of kashrus and the laws of treifus, because it doesn't chas v'shalom. You have to follow the spirit of the law l'chumra, never chas v'shalom l'kula. Okay, so that's a very what?
Halachas of moksa were created at that time.
Exactly, extreme halachas. I'm going to get to the very end. He instituted the halachas of moksa. If we would follow the halachas of moksa, and Nehemiah put into effect at that time, we would go out of our mind. You basically can't touch anything. The only thing you can touch are maybe a fork and a knife, if that even. Only a certain type of fork and knife, not the forks and knives that you're not interested in, that you're not going to use. Don't touch. Don't touch the chair. Don't touch the table. Every single thing in the room is muksa. Maybe the sitter not. Even could be even the sitter, if you're not planning on using the sitter, also it's muksa. It's a whole different world. But and then after they were mechazik themselves in the observance of Shabbos, then those laws were relaxed at a later period of time and came to what we have today, where muksa is chomer, but it's not as chomer as Nehemiah instituted at that point in time. But this is essential to understand that this perek is coming to emphasize everything in this pasuk. In this perek is not the technical halacha; it is the spirit of the halacha, and that's what he tells him over here with Amun Amav. Okay, and that's one very important issue to keep in mind. Now, there's another issue. This is just a fascinating medrash. It's not really. I don't have any real mustervart, any homiletics on the. But just an interesting medrash to be aware of. I'll read you the word of the Medrash inside word for word. It's not hard. So the point is, the Medrash begins, the Medrash in Bereishis Rabba, Parsha Mem. Very basic, fundamental. Not everyone is aware of this Medrash, because not everyone learns Nehemiah. You have a full appreciation. It just ties together a couple of things. V'lama nizkar kan chetam. Why over here does Nehemiah, the very last perek of Tanakh, have to bring out the sin of Ammon and Moab? So the answer is, that's why it's in Parashah, because it's coming to teach us the Musar of Hakara Satoif. In other words, the way it's an unusual form of writing, Avraham did for Lot four acts of kindness. Four times in the life of Avram did he bestow kindness to Lot. Number one, Vayelech ito Lot. After his father was killed, after Haran was thrown into the furnace, so he was a Yosem. Now he wasn't a child, he was an adult. Lot was no child. Avram said, I'm your father now. I'm taking care of you, you're mine. I take full risk, I'll pay your rent, I'll pay your health insurance, and you pay for the car and the gasoline. I'll take care of you. Come under my wings. Tremendous chesed. He could have told Lot, get lost. You know, go find a job. You're all on your own. No. That's number one. The gam loit ha'olechas Avram. The second time, ha'yitzoin. The second instance is later there, he gave him, he set up a business. The gam loit ha'olechas Avram. Who gave him? Who set up the business? Avraham. Second thing he did for him was he set him up. He invested, gave him capital, made a business for him. Next, the next thing was when Lot was captured by Sodom. Melech Sodom, the four kings, the five kings, Avraham risked his life to save the life of Lot. Next, then when Hashem destroyed Vahi B'Shachet Zulukim Estom, so only in the Zuchus of Avraham, Avraham's Tfilos was Lot saved Vayisku Lukim Avraham Vayishlach Es Lot Mitoch Afeicha. Unbelievable. So it's very interesting to know how the Medrash categorizes, I don't think we ever think about it in four different categories, but the Medrash, Bereishis Rabbah, Parshas Mem, it analyzes the relationship of Avraham and Lot. You can make all drash on this, the Da'al Shainas, all these different things. Analyzes, there are four acts of kindness Avraham did for Lot. Number one, he took care of him after the death of his father. Number two, he set him up in business. Number three, he risked his life to save him when he was in trouble. And number four, when Hashem destroyed Sodom, who was only in the merit of Avraham, that Lot was not wiped out, he got a call to get out before it's too late. Okay, so don't you think Lot has an obligation to be makir toiv to Avraham Avinu? At least his descendants, Avraham's and Lot's descendants, who are he has two daughters, and they became pregnant from him, Amon Umov. So don't you think that throughout history that four descendants of Lot, Amon Umov, should reciprocate and be kind to the descendants of Avraham Avinu? However, Uchenegdon Hayubanav Tzrichim Lefray Lon Toivas V'Loi Din Shloi Paru Toivas. Not only would they not reciprocate, but Ella Paru Arbaros. Four times, according to the Medrash analysis, interesting how the Medrash looks at the entire history of Tanakh period. Four times did they do horrible things to us. Four times did Amon Umov not. Yeah. Hadohu d'teima, and I'm not so clear in all the, not a bucky in Tanakh. The first time is Vayishlach Malachim El Bilam. The first time was when Moav sent messengers to Bilam to curse the Atol Chono Orli Esamazek. Bilam ben Baar, Moav went and hired Bilam ben Baar to curse Klal Yisrael. That's the first thing. The next thing was in Shoftim. Okay, now we come to a second event. Vayesoif Elov Espene Amon Vamolek. To battle, there are many, most battles in Shoftim are from the Pelishtim. But look carefully, not all are from the Pelishtim. We have many enemies. We only have, not only the Philistines, we have a lot of enemies. Amon Umov, David had a lot of deals with Moav. I think David HaMelech, in his lifetime, his main adversary was Moav. So it says in Pelishtim, it says in Shoftim, Perigimel, V'yachrichen bo b'nei Moav v'nei Amon. Both, they got together to go to war. Okay, next. Then we come. That is a little bit of Amun of Amalek, and Vayhi Achrichen Bo Bnei Amun Moav. Okay, then there's another battle. Okay, I don't know this. Okay, I don't know this. Another battle that's recorded in Divrei Hayamim in a different time period. There's a different Kufa in Divrei Hayamim Beis Chaf. Hadein Zel Shama Yodai Paras Tsar Al Machmadeha. in Eicha. There's another event, I guess, that took place during the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, Yodoy Paras Tzor Al Kol Machamadeha, and that refers to Moav. Okay, I don't know the four periods. Okay, I have to leave that. I'm not clear, but there's a period in the time of the Shoftim. There was a period later on. It could be during the time of David. It appears in Divrei Hayamim Beis Pasuk Chaf Perik Beis Diriam Beis Perik Chaf. Okay, and then there is L'chora at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon in Sefer Eicha. It's recorded Yado Paras Tzar. And in this context, in Farshim, the Tzar of the enemy was Moav. They extended their hand and they took advantage of Klal Yisrael when Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, destroyed Yerushalayim. They also were there on the sidelines cheering him on and helping themselves to the booty. Four different events. To review, we have the Torah, Moav hired Bilam ben Ba'ar, the time of Shoftim. Then we have in Divrei Hayamim Beis Perikhof, which appears to be during the time of David, third event. And then during the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, Bayis Rishon, the fourth time. We don't appreciate history, but if we were living during these times of history, these are major events where we were threatened from the nation of Moav. So look at that. Avraham was kind to Moab four times, and not only did he not reciprocate, they acted in an evil way four times. Next part of the Medrash, it's an incredible Medrash. And therefore, the Torah, or Tanakh, records their sin four times. Four times in Tanakh, it says, number one, V'lo yavoy amoni umoavi b'kal Hashem, al dvar asher lo yikidim eschem alechem v'mayim. And also for the fact that they hired Bilam ben Bar, that goes together. They did not kidmu eschem alechem v'mayim, it goes together with the fact that they hired Bilam, and that was the same time period. And then we have in Micha, one time we have in the end of Devarim, and then we have in Micha, Ami Zuchor no Mayoitz Bolok. Okay, then we have in Yeshaya. So he doesn't tell me the four places. Let me just say one more time. Al Dvash is number one, Kilogram Zuchor no Mayoitz Bolok. I'm not sure. I didn't prepare properly this Medrash. We have to go to the Medrash. The Medrash says, we'll have to look it up another time. The Medrash says that four places in Tanakh does the Torah record their sin. And the next part of the Medrash is, Omdu Dalid Nevi'im, four Nevi'im arose, V'chos Mugzardinam, who are the four Nevi'im? Elohein Yeshaya, Yirmiya, Yecheskel, and Tzefanya. Yeshaya Omar, Masamov, he had a prophecy, an entire parak describing the vision of the Churban of Moav. We have the vision of Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah Mar Vehishmati El Rabas Bnei Amon Truas Mulchama. I will make known to them the cry of war. That refers to the destruction of Moav. That's in Yirmiyah Parak Memtes, end of Yirmiyah. Yecheskel Amar Livnei Kedem al Bnei Amon, a prophecy of Moav Eses Shefatim, a prophecy of the destruction of Moav, and Tzefanya in Perek Beis says Ki Moav Kistaim Tia over the Amon Kam Moira. So we're putting together over here four fours. It's a beautiful medrash. Typical, this is like a typical type of medrash. We all the numbers come together. Avraham did for Lot four chasadim. Lot's descendants acted in a cruel way to Klal Yisrael four times. Instead of reciprocating four times, they acted to us in a cruel way four times. Therefore, the Torah mentions their sin four times. And the Torah directed four Nevi'im to predict their doom and gloom. Four Nevi'im, Yeshaya, Yecheskel, Yirmiyah, and Tzefanya. Four. Again, one more time. Four chasadim, four acts of cruelty. It's recorded in the Torah their sin four times, and four Nevi'im prophesies their destruction. And here we have over here, in Nehemiah record, that is how Tanakh is ending off. Tanakh is ending off into a certain century, reminding us Hakaras Hatov. It's reminding us a central theme of Yadus is to be Makir Tov, to appreciate what someone does for you, and don't be Meshalem Toiva with the Ra. It's not a good, not exactly a good character trait. Okay, so that pretty much takes care of the Medrash and of the theme I wanted to discuss of Amun Moav. Now let's go further. Pasuk Vav. We're up to V'chol Zeh. We're now going back, and Nehemiah is describing all of this. All of this occurred. This deterioration of Klal Yisrael, the moral fabric of Klal Yisrael deteriorated, where intermarriage and you ingratiated yourself with Tovia and Sanballat, the arch enemies of Klal Yisrael, at the Kach, where even the Kohen Gadol's granddaughter married Tovia. All this happened, V'chol Zeh Lo Hayisi B'Yerushalayim. You know why it happened? Because I wasn't around. There was no strong leadership. Okay, you need strong leadership. There was no strong leadership. I was out of town. V'chol Zeh Lo Hayisi B'Yerushalayim. Why? Why wasn't I there? Where did I go? Because I was summoned by the king to come down to Persia. Ki B'Shnash Shaloshim U'Shalayim, in the 32nd year, Li Artach Shast Melech Bavel. In the 32nd year of the king of Artaxerxes, Melabavl, that is referring to Daryavish. Remember that we have to remember that Nehemiah arrived in Eretz Yisrael in the 20th year. It was in the 20th year of Artaxerxes of Daryavish. Daryavish's 20th year when he arrived in Eretz Yisrael, and he did everything that he needed to do. All of these events that we learned about Nehemiah took place from during the 12-year period of time, from the year 20 to the year 32. But in the year 32, I was called to go back to the king Daryavish, and Basi El HaMelech Ulekeitz Yomin Nishalti Mimach. And then at the end of days, a very interesting expression to how to end Tanakh, what he's coming to allude to over here, the Keitz HaYomin, Keitz Yomin. And at the end of days, I was told to return. I made a request. I was sitting by the king's palace. Again, I was in Eretz Yisrael for 12 years. I was there from the 20th year of his malchus to the 32nd year. In the 32nd year of his malchus, I got a message that the king wants me. I left Eretz Yisrael. I went back to Persia. I sat by the king's side for a period of time. Does not tell us how long he was there. But after this period of time called the Keitz Yomim, very interesting. Why would you choose the word Keitz Yamin? We all know that that's a code for the coming of Mashiach. And especially here when you want to really get esoteric and mystical, when we're holding now at the end of Tanakh, the seam of Tanakh, of Mashiach, Ulekeitz Yamin Nish'alti Min HaMelech. You know, in the Megillah, every time it says HaMelech, it means the Melech Malchi HaMelechim. Here referring to Artaxerxes, referring to Daryavish, I made a request. Can I please go back? I got a message that things are not going exactly the way I like in Yerushalayim. I would like to go back to Yerushalayim and see what's going on. V'avo l'Yerushalayim. I arrived back in Yerushalayim after a period of time of being absent. V'avino v'ro'o. And I understood. I saw the evil that was taking place, and I understood where it started, how it happened, and the nature of this evil, and what needed to be done to rectify the situation. Bachatzrei Beis Hoelokim, in the courtyards of the Beis Hoelokim. He's saying that the evil is rooted in the Beis Hamikdash, in the holy places. See, it's not simply on a very simple level. It means the Avla that they let Tovia live in the Beis Hamikdash. They cleaned out a chamber that used to store the Mincha, the Levina, and the Nesachim, and the Meiser, and they gave it. That's what it means, Al Derech Pshat. But on a much deeper level, he understood that all the sources of evil begin Al Shem Shemayim. I understood that all of the problems that were plaguing Klal Yisrael are all rooted where? B'chatzrei Beis Elokim. If there's a chasaron in a yeshiva, there's a chasaron in a holy makom, that trickles down, has a trickle-down effect to the entire Klal Yisrael. the mekaymos of kedusha, the chatra space elokim, must be 100% pure, and the mela it will trickle down to the rest of the world, tahara and purity. Where do we find this concept? It's a very similar concept, and that's on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, we bring two seirim. We being the Soher LaHashem and the Soher LaZaza. Now let's think about it. What are we coming to atone for in Yom Kippur? For a million Averis. By every Aver in the book. The whole Klal Yisrael have long lists that come with a ledger of all the Averis. Which one of the two Seirim is Mechaper for all of the Averis? For Klal Yisrael. The Soher LaZaza. And what do? You do nothing. You smicha. And you just throw it off a cliff. There's very little ceremony. There's very little very few things need to be done to get rid of all. And what's the Sar Lash? Oh, the Sar Lashem. Oh, big process. The vidui, and you dip, you sprinkle the blood 8 times in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on the Parochas, 8 times, and together with the par, and then you sprinkle on the Mizbeach HaZov, and the leftover blood goes on the Mizbeach HaNechoshes. 4 different sets of application of blood is done with the Sar LaHashem. Together with the par at a certain period of time, and the Kohen Gadol changes clothing in the middle, it's super complex. The sanctity, Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Parochas, the Mizbeach HaZov, Mizbeach HaNechoshes. And let me ask you, what is the Mechaper for? What is it? It's a very simple. Tumas Mikdosh VeKadoshav. Just in case a Kohen did Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash and he didn't realize when he was coming to do Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, he brushed up against the dead sherets. On the way to work, there was a kazayis boss of a sherets lying on it. That happens. We all know, you know, he was driving his car and there was a dog and he passed over the dog and he brushed up against a kazayis boss of Minhanes. He was Tomei and he came into the Beis HaMikdash and he did Avoda in a state of Tumah and he didn't even realize. So you need a kapara. That is what the Soher LaHashem is mechaper. For Tumas Mikdash VeKadoshav and for every other Avera in the book, all Taryag Mitzvos, for the Gans Klal Yisrael, what's mechaper? The Soher LaZazel. What's going on? We're dealing over here with an infinite number of averos, and that's Sar LaZazel. And for maybe a few times, the Sar Tumas Mikdash VeKadoshav, they were super, super careful when it comes to Kachin, the Mikvos, and it was Tara. You can imagine what went on. Maybe there was Tumas Mikdash VeKadoshav, you need this elaborate procedure, the Sar LaShem, with 4 applications of blood in 4 different parts of the Beis HaMikdash. What's the Pshat? The pshat is because Tumas Mikdash VeKadoshav doesn't just mean simply, it means a kazayis bosom in hanes. It means there is a corruption of the values of Kedusha. Tumma doesn't just mean this contamination and one comes in contact with the dead or one comes in contact with the sherets. Tumma means your values, your hashkafa, your relationship to holiness is corrupt. A novel Bereshus HaTorah. Here I am, I'm in the Beis HaMikdash, in the holiest place in the world, and I have a certain hashkafa. I'm not, you know, business, we're not 100% honest. You know, we can, we don't have to pay all the workers on time. No big deal. We'll pay them tomorrow. There's a corruption in Hashkafa. That's the concept of Tumas Mikdash VeKadoshav. And when there's a little slight corruption in the sanctity of a holy place, that is much, much more severe than all the Averos, because it's a trickle-down effect. When holiness has been compromised, then there's no limit to what can happen. There are no barriers. The whole Torah can become corrupt, and all the barriers will be lifted. But when there's a center, and that center is 100% pure, then this hope, even if we have all the averus that have been committed out there in the world, no, there's a place of truth. And from that truth, eventually it will spread and it will mitahir all of what was contaminated out in the world. You have to have a center that is 100% pure. And that is what really he's saying over here, v'avinu v'arad. There are many evils that he took note of. We're going to learn. Shabbos, no one was observing Shabbos, and no one there was intermarriage, and they were not supporting the Kohanim and Levim. There was corruption, there was terrible things that were taking place. And he makes it very clear. It's a very powerful pasuk. V'avinu v'arad, I understood the evil. And you know where all the evil comes from? Besides the simple interpretation that he's talking about the evil of Tovia living in the Beis HaMikdash. But I understood Asher also El Yashiv LeTovia La'asos Lo Nishka, to make for him a chamber B'chatre Beis Elokim. The Ikar Ra is there is defilement in the holiest place. The Kohen Gadol, the holiest man of Klal Yisrael, is corrupt. And he has corrupted the holiest place by bringing into the holiest place hashkafos which are corrupt. And that, once that happens, the authority is corrupt. The center of holiness corrupt. Trickle-down effect, everything becomes corrupt. Okay. Now we have over here, let's do one more puzzle, we'll do the Rashi, and we'll stop. Vayir Elim Odu was very evil to me. Vo'ashlichas kol kleves tovia. Hachutz min alishka, and I gave the command to remove all of, to purge Tovia and his home and all of his possessions from the Beis HaMikdash. Extreme measures. Okay, this was extreme measures. Today this would never go off. It would never work today. Today someone comes, what's going on over here? What's going on over here? Clean house. Clean house, we'll clean you. We'll clean you out of the house. You're telling us to clean house? We'll get rid of you. Nehemiah had that power. Can we have, it's hard for us to imagine a person, Gesundheit, a person that's such a respected leader that can command such respect, can do such a thing, but he did it. He stood up to these people.
Tovia was rich and
famous and well-connected. Well-connected. Okay, let's just see the Rashi. This is the Rashi. We'll stop. These Pesukim Vav through Ches, Pasuk Vav and Rashi, B'chol Zeh, B'chol Hamayis HaZeh Bosi El HaMelech V'Chazati L'Bavel. During this entire period of time, I came to the Melech. The Chazarti, all of these terrible things happened when I left Eretz Yisrael in the 32nd year of the Malchus of Daryavesh to go to the king. One very important point that Rav Schwab mentions is a very big mystery, and I'm sure there's great depth. Here we're now concluding Sefer and Nehemiah, Ezra Nehemiah. Artachshast is called by three names. Before he was called Melech Ashur and Melech Paras. And now mysteriously he's being called Melech Bavel. So who is he? Is Daryavesh the king of Bavel? Is he the king of Persia? Or is he the king of Ashur? Now L'chairov, I would ask you, he's Paras. I mean, he is the king of Paras. Bavel is long gone. Ashur is even more long gone.
Really, it's all of the above.
Oh, so what is going on here? So it's a big... There are obviously many levels of interpretation. In the ancient times, it wasn't a clean sweep. When a new king came to power, he subsumed. He took in with him all of the previous kingdoms. And each kingdom had a certain nature, a certain personality, a certain characteristic. So here, when he's going now to Artaxerxes, he's dealing with issues relating to Bavel. What are those issues in the Hashkafa relating to Bavel? I don't know. Avshab says he leaves as a question, doesn't know. But it's something you can't ignore. It's not to be ignored that in the three different places in these Svarim, in Ezra and Nehemiah, we have Daryavesh. And Daryavesh is a multifaceted person. On the one hand, he's a carryover from Melech Ashur, Sancheirif, which existed more than 300 years ago. On the other hand, he's also a carryover of Melech Bavel, which lived about 100 years ago. And now he's been called, and he's also called, he's physically the king of Paras. And who is Paras? Well, Paras was the son-in-law of Modai. Achashverosh, Koresh was Melech of Modai, the other way around. Daryavesh HaModai. Koresh was who gave it over to Achashverosh, who gave it over to Daryavesh HaParsi. But who came before Koresh? Melech Modi, it was an alliance. Daryavish HaModai, the first one that took over after Babel was not Persia, it was Modai, Parasu Modai. Modai came first for a very short period of time, for 3 years. And then he retired. It was in those days, he was in his 60s. And 60s was not fit to be a king, so he gave it over to his son-in-law, the young Koresh, but he only lasted for a very short period of time, only lasted for 2-3 years as well. And then it went right away to Ahasuerus, who was king for 14 years, and then went to Daryavesh, whose son learned was the son of Esther, which went for a very long time. We know at least he went for 32 years. Could be he went for even more. Okay, so all of this, that's an important point.
52.
Total of 52, correct?
52.
So that means 32, plus we have to account also for Ahasuerus, 14 years.
You said 14 and 3 and 3, so that's 52.
Okay. Nishalti, Shayitin li Rishus Lalos Yushlaim, I asked him Rishus after I was there for Kates Hayomim, I asked him permission to return to Yushalayim, and he gave him permission. Let's see the Mesulas, just these psukim, and we're finished. Pasik Vav, Vachol Zebe Eish, Shenasa, Dover Hazah, Sharpino, El Yashiv, Eskol Eile Bavur Tovia. When El Yashiv the Kohen, he was the third Kohen Gadol of the time, he did all this. He cleaned up the Beis HaMikdash to give Tovia residence to the Beis HaMikdash. That's when all of these terrible things happened. It does not tell us in Tanakh exactly how many days have passed when he made a request from the Yavish, I'm getting out of here, I got to go back to Yerushalayim because things are not going well. I paid attention, lehovin, to understand beros hamasa she'os el yashiv bedvar tovia, concerning tovia, lesakinu lepanois leilishka, to prepare and to clean out a chamber, be'ech be'achad mechatzreis beis Hashem, one of the courtyards of the Beis Hamidash. Vayera li hadover hazeho yara be'enai, was evil in my eyes. Obviously, it wasn't evil to the people, they tolerated this, but he had a different look. Nehemiah had a different perspective. This was evil in his eyes, and Pasik. As kol clay, kol tashmishay habayis, I cleaned out all of the tashmishay habayis. Okay, we will stop here. Pick this up. Mirtz Hashem.